Asheville FM on WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursta Goodness.
And I'm William Goodenough.
This show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio, and Berkeley Liberation Radio. Archives of the show can be heard a week after broadcast at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org and podcasting at radioforall.net. You can email us at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net, and you can send us snail mail at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.
A reminder to listeners with graphic skills, we here at The Final Straw have gotten some great submissions for sticker, poster, and merch designs for the show, but would love to see what else y'all could throw our way. If you have an idea or an image that could include the show name, ashevillefm.org/the-final-straw, and some kind of thematically related title, like a weekly anarchist radio show, or imagery, you can email designs to bursts@ashevillefm.org or mail to The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.
This week we spoke with John, an anti-racist insurrectional anarchist who grew up in the U.S. South. John discusses the anti-Klan rally that happened on July 18th in Columbia, South Carolina, what he saw, the implications, who was there, and why. Next episode, we'll discuss media representations at the rally, such as positing as showdown between the KKK and the, quote, Black Panther Party, unquote, meaning the in actuality the new Black Panther Party, an organization unconnected to the original Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. That was around during the 60s and 70s. We'll also talk about violent opposition to racists and the concept of the New South. If you can't wait to hear that, check out our podcast file version of this episode, which will bring you 1.5 hours of the conversation, plus our regular announcements, Sean Swain segment, and some Dirty South jams. For those in the radio audience, the second portion of our conversation with John will be aired next week, along with other material. Please note that John wished us to inform y'all that he's a kind of nervous guy who doesn't do interviews very often, and so his laughter during some of the serious points is not a sign of levity or a lack of seriousness, but more a sign of discomfort on him.
If you'd like to hear this show on a community radio station in your town, send us an email or just contact us and propose it to your local station and why you'd like to hear it. The show is free to pick up off and download or podcast from radioforall.net, along with a bunch of other great programming. But please drop us a line so we can announce the station and, more importantly, to brag about it to other programmers on Asheville FM. Yeah, 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 yeah. On a separate tip, the main topic of our conversation on the last episode, anarchist prisoner Eric King of Kansas City will be having a birthday on August 2nd. Drop him a line, share some of your own poetry, make friends, whatever. You can write Eric at Eric King, number 270-90045. CCA Leavenworth, 100 Highway Terrace, Leavenworth, Kansas, 66048. Also, he has an Amazon wish list where you can buy books online and get this voracious reader. Details on that or direct deposits to his commissary can be found at supporterickking.wordpress.com.
August 8, 2015 marks 37 years of unjust imprisonment for the Move 9, who are part of the Move organization founded by John Africa. The MOVE organization is a multifaceted group whose tenets include anti-slavery, anti-racism, anti-industry, anti-colonialism, and pro-revolutionaryism, among many others. The MOVE 9 are a group of men and women who have been imprisoned since August 8, 1978, following a massive police attack on their home, on them at their home in a residential neighborhood of Powelton Village in Philadelphia. The government and the Philly PD dropped a bomb on their house, killing 11 people, including children. One officer died in this attack, and it's been proven that none of the MOVE 9 could have possibly been responsible. Despite this evidence, they are still held captive by the retributious state. On Saturday, August 1st, there's a call for support at a community town hall meeting to demand the Justice Department take action to investigate the case and wrongful imprisonment of the MOVE 9. This meeting will take place in Philadelphia, PA, from noon to 4 p.m. at the African American Museum located at 701 Arch Street, downtown Philadelphia. Topics to be covered will include the destruction of the house, the beating of Delbert Africa, the trial of the MOVE 9, and the illegal practices of the Pennsylvania Parole Board. For more information on about this organization and about the MOVE 9's case, people can go to www.onamove.com. And to hear our past episodes on the MOVE 9, check out thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org and search MOVE9.
As a final little heads up to folks in the listening audience, I'd suggest you check out the July 9th, 2015 episode of the Blog Talk Free Alabama Movement podcast. The show is produced by prisoners within the Alabama and Mississippi prison system and connects them with the folks on the outside and folks incarcerated across the U.S. This episode features a convo between members of FAMM, Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan of the Lucasville Death Row prisoners currently held at OCF Youngstown, as well as Alex of Prison Legal Newsletter. You can find links to this episode and tons of other interviews and resources up on the site supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org.
Donald Trump is the son of a real estate mogul. He went to the Wharton Business School before inheriting his daddy's fortune and blowing it, filing for bankruptcy several times. He's an obnoxious know-nothing blowhard who still insists that he has somehow earned his position of privilege in our world. In the midst of his run for U.S. president, Trump made some controversial comments, claiming that Arizona Senator John McCain, a Vietnam vet and former POW, is not a war hero. As a consequence, the mainstream media has gone totally bonkers. Apparently, it's unthinkable to question McCain's war hero status. I'm not sure why. So look, we've got a situation here, similar to something a math whiz friend of mine once described. He said that if you lock 100 chimps in a room with a computer keyboard over a long enough trajectory, one of them, clicking at random, will type a Shakespearean sonnet. Now, what we're dealing with isn't a sonnet, but the same scenario. If a chimp named Donald Trump babbles long enough, he'll say something I agree with. So don't take this as an endorsement of that jackwagon, since I'm probably going to soon be running against him. But I agree with Trump for once. The fact is, John McCain is no hero of any kind. Donald Trump got it right. John McCain was a graduate of the Naval Academy, and when his country called on him to suppress democracy in a foreign land by obliterating innocent men, women, and children, John McCain flew 23 bombing missions over Vietnam, killing possibly tens of thousands of total strangers before he was shot down and held for 5.5 years as a prisoner of war. Poor deluded hierarchs think McCain is a hero for serving his country, which means he followed the orders of an idiot in a suit, and he slaughtered unarmed strangers who had done absolutely nothing to him. If blind obedience to orders to kill makes someone a hero, then the serial killer in the Son of Sam murders, who simply obeyed the orders to kill given to him by his dog, should have been given the ticker tape parade rather than a life sentence. 23 times John McCain hit a button to unleash bombs on people minding their own business in their own country. I remember 8 years ago when McCain ran for president against Obama. McCain tried to make it appear that Obama was close friends to former weatherman Bill Ayers, whose group detonated a bomb in the U.S. Capitol. In that bombing, no one was hurt. It seemed hypocritical to me that McCain, who dropped tons of bombs 23 times, criticized Bill Ayers' bombing of the U.S. Capitol, when Ayers courageously and thoughtfully opposed the illegal war in which McCain was a participant. At the time, I was inspired to write this poem. Bill Ayers was wrong for making a bomb, or so says John McCain, because women and children Bill never killed, dropping it from a plane. So why was John McCain a hero again? Oh yeah, he was held 5.5 years as a POW. But McCain killed thousands in his bombing runs. To contrast his situation with mine, I killed one guy and I've been held by an illegitimate rogue state for 24 years and counting. McCain killed thousands and served 5.5 years. I don't hear Senator John McCain, the lawmaker, proposing to revise his country's criminal codes to reduce killers' sentences to 5.5 years. By all rights, that murderous maniac should still be in custody. Unabomber Ted Kaczynski killed a fraction of 1% of the number of people McCain blew to pieces, and he's buried in the basement at the Federal Super Duper Max at Colorado, while McCain pontificates his hierarch madness from the floor of the U.S. Senate. In a sane world, Ted Kaczynski and John McCain would trade places. Ever read Kaczynski's Industrial Society and Its Future? Awesome read. He spends a little too long in his critique of the over-socialized leftist, but it's still awesome. And I don't care how long you lock that monkey John McCain in a room, nothing nearly that profound would ever emerge from his random clacking on the computer keyboard. But let's lock him in there anyway, and let's stop calling war criminals heroes. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from the Southern Ohio Correctional Facility in Lucasville. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at SeanSwain243-205, P.O. Box 45699, 1724 State Route, number 728, Lucasville, Ohio, 45699. To read some of Sean's writings and learn more about his case, check out SeanSwain.org.
This week on The Final Straw, we are talking to a comrade named John who was present at the July 18th counter-protest for the KKK in Columbia, South Carolina. Thanks for coming on, John.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
First of all, would you like briefly describe what was going on the day for the benefit of people who haven't heard yet?
Yeah, sure. So at 1:30, there was a call out to meet up at a location on the USC college grounds, which is about 4 blocks south of the Capitol. And it was a call from like Anti-Racist South Carolina, which is some sort of anti-racist group in South Carolina, I'd imagine. So there were about 40 people that showed up to that and had big banners that declared being against white supremacy. And one of the cooler banners was an American flag and a Confederate flag on fire. And that said Carolina anti-racists. So I think it was good to like show that or whatever. But that group marched up Sumter Street, which runs along the east side of the Capitol. And really didn't gain much attention at all until we got to the corner of the Capitol. Once we got there, there was already the Black Educators for Justice /RBG Columbia rally happening. That was a Black Power rally / anti-white supremacy rally. Mm-hmm. And most of us just kind of hung out there for a while, not trying to disrupt it. Because originally the news had said that the RBG group and the KKK had the same rally section point and it would have an overlap of an hour, and so we were kind of waiting to see what would happen, because it kind of we would imagine that the RBG group wouldn't leave and then there'd be some kind of scuffle right there, but friends from South Carolina actually gave us information that the Klan was now moving to the south side of the state house, and that there was already barricades set up and there were already some Klan supporters as well as a lot of counter protesters. So we made our way down there. And the Klan was scheduled to go on at 3, and I think this was probably like 2:30, 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we got there, we got confronted by some neo-Nazis screaming white power, yeah. And there was a confrontation there. And cops kind of rushed in, but surprisingly there weren't too many of them. But anyhow, the Klan came in around 3:30, and it turned out it was KKK mixed with National Socialist Movement, and they weren't wearing their robes. They were all wearing kind of like a military-style...
Fatigues,
yeah, with little... There was a differentiation. If there was the Klan, they had the little Klan logo that's a white cross inside of a red circle with a red drop of blood. And if they were National Socialist Movement, it's like an American flag with a swastika in the middle of it. As they came in, they were protected by police. And at first, people just kind of were yelling at them. I'd say there were probably about anywhere between like 500 and 1,000 counter-protesters in the very beginning. Maybe less, maybe like 500 in the very beginning. And it seemed like people were just kind of content to spit and yell at them. But then as soon as they got into the little gated area in the south side of the state house, I don't know what happened right at that moment because I wasn't there, but I saw the crowd surge and...
The gated area is where they had their permit to protest.
Yeah, sorry, where they had their permit to protest. And I saw the crowd surge and a bunch of white people that I'd seen supporting the Klan run the opposite direction. and then I looked up and I just saw like bottles and rocks in the air for a second. And then I saw a few people get arrested, and I guess there was some kind of clash that happened as they were coming in. And then while the rally was happening, it was funny, they didn't have, like, a sound system, so it was just, like, 25 people yelling incoherently at one another without anyone hearing for a while. And during the rally, someone, I don't know who, stole a Confederate flag from either a supporter or from an actual Klansman and ran away, and they burned it. And then the police went that way, which was around the east side of the State House. But it was kind of just like a tense moment where I wasn't sure what we were going to do, and no one was really sure. There was like a lot of yelling back and forth. Some like pro-Klan or pro-Confederate supporters were fought. That's when I first noticed there was a really large contingent of blood, like Piru, whatever, Damu gang members in the front. But then I also noticed with them several Crips, because it was people in mostly blue with them throwing C's in the air, and then also a contingent of kids wearing mostly black bandana print stuff, which I think is Gangster Disciples, which is like a Chicago-based gang. And that, I was like, oh, this is cool. These people are close to each other and not having fights and just kind of like tearing up Confederate flags already. The police ended up cutting the rally an hour short because they felt like they couldn't control the crowds, it seemed like. I mean, I'm sure the KKK is like, they were silencing us because we were speaking truth to power, but whatever. And as that was happening, the police sort of, the way they came in, they formed a much wider line so people couldn't get as close to the Klan. But then we noticed that the line only went about 15 cops long. So several of us, and by us I mean like my friends, which are anarchist anti-racists, along with a crew of what seemed like Crips, because it was dudes in all blue, walked just beyond those cops and then kind of cut off the route. And then cops started pushing, and one of the younger black men that I was around said, let's just go to the street. We can just cut them off there. And so I was like, all right, man, this is... And I could see a really like tall black guy was like doing the image of like punching your fist, like getting ready to fight. And I was like, man, this is crazy. There's so many cops here, but they're not really doing a very good job of controlling this. This is going to go crazy. And so we were walking down onto the street on, I guess, the east side of the... I don't know. There's an underground parking deck that you have to kind of like walk over the entrance of. And so there's two adjacent sidewalks at that point. And so all the like anti-Klan people are on the left side, and the Klan and the cops are on the right. And I saw a couple of bottles being thrown across at that point. I was like, this is crazy. The cops aren't doing anything. And then we got onto the street, and a bunch of us of all kinds realized that there's like a little barricade in front of the State House. That I guess essentially it's like a 9/11 precaution, I think, so people can't drive car bombs in. But it sort of made a wide sidewalk area. And so the Klan was on the sidewalk. And then there were cops. The Klan was on the sidewalk closest to the building, and then the cops were right outside of them. And then there was just tons of people that were yelling at them. I think the first thing I saw was a few bottles get thrown at the Klan. Like, and these aren't glass bottles. It was mostly like full Gatorade bottles and water bottles, and hit some people. And that's what I noticed also, which something you said was that people were using, the Klansmen and Nazis were using like small children that they had and were putting them in front of them.
Yeah.
So that they could protect themselves from violence, which is just despicable.
Well, what about people who had youth who were in the anti-racist
Yeah, there were side? Definitely at least a friend of ours brought kids, because I think that they wanted to show them that it's important to fight against white supremacists when they organize, especially in the Southeast. But those folks had their kids behind them at all points, especially if it got tense. Like, they wanted the kids away from things, and we all kind of made sure to keep the kids away from conflict, as opposed to these Klansmen who were like...
Where's your 14 words now?
Like, yeah.
Securing a white future.
And I heard those kids were anywhere from, like, 4 to maybe 10 years old.
Yeah, there was, like, a kind of hilarious... in a bad way, but there's like a picture of some like crying baby skinhead, which is a funny, it's f***ed up because I don't think that they should have brought their kid to that, but it's funny because he does look exactly like a miniature, like it's like a little bald white boy.
That sounds like when attached to the Dixie B. Dam presentation that happened here in town.
Yeah,
someone shared a story of this media person, like the skinhead getting yelled at who had a kid, and then the media like putting in their mic and like, hey, is it okay for me to ask your kid a question? Like, yeah, that's fine. Like, points to the kid and says, like, hey, would you want to talk? Yeah, totally. How does it make you feel what these people around you are saying about what your dad is doing and how you're dressed. And the kid just like looks and just like starts bawling.
Whoa, that I might didn't be the see same that. Thing. That's amazing. It probably is where that photo is
from.
Then
they're like, okay, enough. Stop.
I'm surprised they let the kid. I don't know. That's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. But as we got to the sidewalk, there's open confrontation or like verbal slash physical ish. But I think the first thing I saw was someone started spitting on this one Klansman or neo-Nazi. Was hard to tell, but he had a really big Confederate flag. And the guy was like, spit on me again, boy. And then the guy did. And then the Klan or whatever, the white man with the flag, tried to attack the person. Then people pushed him back. A cop pushed him back as well. And then almost simultaneously to my left, a man, I'd say like late 20s, black man got out of the crowd and just like slugged a KKK guy right in the face. Like it looked like a slow motion movie or something where you see the face go. Mm-hmm. And the cops grabbed him, and then who turned out to be another guy who turned out to be his brother tried to de-arrest him. A bunch of us tried to de-arrest the man that was de-arresting, and it turned into a little melee. A cop got knocked on the ground. Another person was arrested. Another, like a white anti-racist protester, was arrested by the police. And then that sort of was a little confrontation zone right there. And then from my experience, what happened was there was getting pushed up against that barricade that I talked about earlier by the police. And so I hopped over it and then was in the streets. And that's when I realized, looking around, that there was probably a couple hundred people just in the streets, like ready to fight the Klan. And I'd already started seeing kids, mostly young black kids, but other people as well, with Confederate flags that had been snatched from Klan and Klan supporters. And at least at that moment, I thought, huh, this could actually turn into a real riot. Like, the police do not control the streets of Columbia right now. This, like, amalgamation of, like, Bloods, Crips, Gangster Disciples, anarchists, mm-hmm. parents, some Latino children are who run the streets right now. And there kept being more, like, fights. And what a thing that I noticed is that the police, I think because they were overwhelmed, wouldn't arrest people if you, like, hit a Klansman with a rock or a bottle. But if you, like, actually physically got them, then they got arrested. So we marched for a while alongside and eventually basically ran the Klan into the parking deck where their cars were parked. And then the police formed a pretty strong cordon around that. And a funny scene ensued where there'd be like Klansmen like mooning people because they're just fucking idiots. And people were just yelling. But what happened right there was one of the cooler celebratory moments I've experienced in my life, where once people couldn't really get at the Klan, but we were still like waiting, you'd see just like tons of kids and adults just with the Confederate flags, like tearing them up and spitting on them. And like, I saw a really cool picture of the three different gangs I mentioned earlier posing in a picture, like kids from those gangs all posing together, throwing up like neighborhood signs, and then all with like torn Confederate flags and like posing for pictures like that. And then like other dude like peeing on the Confederate flag. And, like, and it was really positive feeling. Like, I was out there, like, hugging people and, like, giving people daps and stuff. And it felt really, like, I don't know, the most positive experience of violence that I've ever had, where it was a really celebratory moment between different gangs and different people of different races. And people, I remember, like, friends of mine telling me that, like, people were like, hell yeah, there's white people out here trying to fight the Klan, too, and, like, mm-hmm. hugging. And, like, people were, like, I don't know, it was just a really amazing, like, it made me tear up, sort of. And then mm-hmm. I remember one guy was like, yeah, man, this is the new South. Y'all are the old South. This is the new South. And that was really moving. And I was kind of glad I was wearing sunglasses because I think people, it was like not a moment to be teary eyed because mm-hmm. you had to be serious, but it was also amazing. What else? And then what happened next? I'm trying to remember now.
Will you talk about the car?
Yeah. Okay. So the next thing that, so for, I would say like, it felt like an hour, you know, of this, mm-hmm. but probably it was like 20 minutes of the Klan and the Nazis
moving people,
being stuck inside of the parking deck, which really felt crazy. Like, I think that there wasn't very much media there, but I feel like it felt like, I don't know, just weird to be like, you guys are stuck in this fucking parking deck, and people are waiting to beat you. Mm-hmm. But so eventually, police kind of like cordoned a line off the west side of the parking deck, I guess, and the west exit, which led up to the state house again. Mm-hmm. Around the corner did. But the way that the route they gave the Klan led up to the state house. But the cops kind of cordoned off an area so that the Klan vehicles could get out. And once again, a thing happened where like I think other people realize this too, but I saw this where they were making a line, but their line only went so far. And so the first few cars got away, and then everyone's there's this Klanswoman and man driving like a drop top like Chevy, and everyone was like, "F y'all," because you could see them. And so I think everyone ran around and tried to like bang on their car, and they were like flip people off. And then the next vehicle up was this black SUV driven by a guy from the National Socialist Movement, who I think is from another part of the country. But he,
Kansas.
Yeah, so, oh yeah, people saw his license plate and said Kansas. But people ran up to his car and he was like blah, 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 and said like swearing at people. And then I think he called people a racial slur. I think he called everyone like monkeys or something. And then in like kind of a cool guy fashion, tried to like speed off like, and then, but I think in fear slash like, oh, probably really just fear, but also like trying to look cool. I guess insecurity. Hit the gas really hard and then turned the corner and then ran straight into a light pole. And that was like the, it felt like you were in a movie. Like people were like, yeah, and like cheering and like being like, you don't know how to drive, you ugly motherfucker, or whatever. And like, I saw like a white guy, old white guy and a black guy like high-fiving, and people like putting their arms around each other. And I was like, man, this is the greatest day I've ever experienced. And people all ran up to the car, and I hear people tried to maybe break windows out of the back of it. I was at the front. I saw some people trying to move the light pole that had been dislodged into the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see any of the next thing, but there's a lot of documentation. But at that exact moment, I think a crew of kids like had foresight to go even farther away from the police, basically near the state house. It's like two blocks up. And they were just waiting and just started pelting KKK. There's a video online of kids pelting a KKK truck with rocks. And then also like some Klan supporter got jumped by what I assume is Bloods, like literally flame, like wearing like red pants that had like gang bandana print. I don't know what else to say, but just like being the shit out of him in the middle of the street. And then in that same video though, you see like somebody else being like, welcome to SC motherfucker, and then throwing up C's and wearing blue. So that like, even in that moment, there was, I guess, gang unity. And I also heard from a friend that was more ARAE, which is anti-racist action, which is like a particular kind of anti-racist, said that behind us were, because the line of cars got stopped and the police all rushed to the messed up SUV. And someone said that people attacked a car behind it as well and tried to break windows, but I didn't see that. Eventually, the police took over the intersection. I think some people got detained right there, but I don't think anyone actually got arrested right at that moment, but maybe. And there's a lot of other stuff happening. Like, I didn't see nearly everything that happened. But we marched back up to the state house, and then I saw kind of another celebratory moment where people were just, like, tearing flags. And at that point, like, little, like, my friend's kids, who were, like, young boys, were burning a flag with some other kids. And a cool thing, I saw people tying the Confederate flag around their shoes and like stepping on it as like a sign of disrespect. And so, I know, all in all, it was a really nice day.
It was hot.
It was very hot. It was like almost 100 degrees and it's very humid. And but people held on, and like we just had some water bottles we're giving out to people. And that, like, I heard from some people that they had, like, I think some people aren't really comfortable around like street people or like, I don't know, maybe have like a fear, which is maybe understandable, of like people that you've heard of as being like criminals. But I think if you're like a white anti-racist.
You're not talking about houseless folks right here.
No, no, I mean like street organizations, like gang members. Because I think some people felt a little intimidated, maybe like at the very beginning when they got Confederate flags, like when the Klan rally was still happening, there was like a ton of people just throwing up bees and like yelling like squad. I thought it was amazing. But I think maybe some people felt nervous, but I think that for me at least, and maybe others, like just yelling as much as you could at the police and at the Klan. Oh, that was another thing, was that people throughout the time were like just yelling at the police, saying, "F the police." And then also young black men were going up to black officers and calling them like house N-words and like Uncle Toms and stuff, which was really, I don't know, it was a really
intense
and like moving time. I don't know, that's kind of what happened.
What could you say about like the demographic of the police present, and how do you think the state of South Carolina and the city, the capital, how do you think that they were politicking what the police presence looked like and how they interacted with the Klan and with the crowd?
You mean like the racial demographic, or like the like
that's
different
part of
police makeup? Because
like racial demographic representation, and then also how do you think that they were, as a department, being directed to respond to the demonstrators and the counter-demonstrators, too?
I don't really... It's like, hard to gauge how they were told to respond, because it seemed like... I don't know. I've never really experienced the level of, like, under-policing. Like, I think that if all of us that were there knew how under-policed it was going to be, things would have gotten a lot crazier a lot faster, but people were feeling each other out, I think. Because, you know, a lot of people of, like, Anarchy World went as affinity groups, and then a lot of other folks went in their crews, and so I think you're like, yeah, my six friends are cool, but I don't know how these f***ing random weirdos... but to the racial demographics, it felt really mixed as far as I'd seen, and I'm unfortunately ignorant of South Carolina, but where I live, which is also a southern state that's a city that's majority black, or at least majority not white, there's a lot of black police. So I think that it's, and South Carolina is what, I think 30% black, and Columbia is about 41% black. So I would tend to assume that the police in general are a rather mixed group of cops. And I know that, like, the chief of the Capitol Police is black because there's that ridiculous picture of him helping out some old-ass neo-Nazi who's suffering from heat stroke that everyone's showing around like it matters.
I mean, so you're talking about, like, an old white man who is protesting on behalf of the Confederate flag being carried away by cops wrapped in the Confederate flag. Sounds like a Norman Rockwell picture to me, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they definitely... Okay, so I think South Carolina itself is really shockingly savvy when it comes to trying to quell, like, a certain level of racial, on the black side of things, violence, or, like, popular violence. So maybe that's how it's reflected. Like, in my mind, when that cop killed an unarmed black man in North Charleston, they arrested him instantly, and he's still in jail. When Dylan Roof, the white terrorist, killed 9 people in the AME church in Charleston, they tried to find him as fast as possible, and then, you know, like, put him in jail, and, like, now, because all this controversy, the governor, all these people wanted the Confederate flag down, not because you think they really care about the legacy of racism, but because they don't want their state to look bad, or they don't want rioting, because understandably they're afraid, because what, Missouri's probably, I have no idea, but, like, it's not as, like, the whole state of South Carolina could become in some way or another like a Ferguson or something, because it's a really impoverished state. It has a high level of organized gang activity. It's incredibly racist. There's a lot of guns. So I think that probably, yeah, like, when I said it felt like it could have turned into a riot, I mean, like, the police had real guns. They also had, like, pepper ball guns, and they had grenade launchers for shooting tear gas. And they did not even seem like they were going to do that, because the only time I saw a gun out was because some old-ass racist man had a knife behind some black kids. And the cops were, like, quickly dealt with that. Not like I'm trying to give cops credit, but I think they were concerned with the idea of it turning into, like, a black riot or, like, a popular riot, more so than being worried that, like, a few Klansmen maybe got punched.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they, and yeah, I think that probably having a mixed police force was really good for PR, obviously.
So you mentioned Dylan Roof earlier.
Yeah.
Would you talk about this day, like, within the, as much as you can, within the recent context of, like, white supremacist oppression in this country?
I mean, I can talk about what I think, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
I was like, I don't know, it's the U.S., so
give
white supremacy.
Choice,
well, I think it's important to note that the demonstration was called for a month and a day after Dylan Roof killed the 9 people in the AME church in Charleston. And so I feel like that's a really significant thing that the media just was like, it's a pro-Confederate flag rally, because that's what the Klan said. And for some reason, we take the Klan at its word.
Mm-hmm.
And that it wasn't like against, it wasn't a race thing. It was just about our heritage. And it was like, no, but you're the Klan. No one believes them. So Dylan Roof was what? He was a 21-year-old, like, white kid from South Carolina who was a racial extremist. But I think that, you know, he could have done that at any point in time. He's a racist that hated black people and believed in racial war. But I think the reason why he chose right now is because he's part of a, like, a white supremacist backlash to the recent, Black Lives Matter / like anti-police black uprising in this country. And I think he just follows, he's basically, it's like the old KKK. They're like, oh, well, these police aren't doing their job, in which the job of the police is to suppress any resistance, but especially in the South and everywhere, to suppress black people. Like, that's what this nation is built on, is the creation of, like, upping white people and the suppression of black insurrection. I think it's also notable, and I don't know if, I don't think he knew this, because he doesn't seem that smart, but maybe he did, but it was the day that he shot up that church was it was close to the anniversary of the Denmark Vesey failed insurrection, and he was a slave in South Carolina who had been a slave in Haiti and brought in, like, ideas from the Haitian Revolution, and was planning a huge insurrection that would attack Charleston, but was snitched out by a, I don't know, a scared slave. Yeah, and Denmark Vesey was actually, like, a figure in that church, in the AME Emanuel Church, before it was in its current location. And so, I mean, I think he definitely knew that black churches have a huge significant presence in, like, black insurrection, or more modernly sort of black civil society protests in the Southeast. So, I mean, he clearly chose, he could have killed black people anywhere, right? But he chose, like, a very, very, it's like the biggest, oldest black church in South Carolina, mm-hmm. to my knowledge. I could be wrong, but. But yeah, I don't know. I think that, yeah, his whole thing is that, yeah, like, the police aren't doing their job. And I think the anti-Confederate flag debate is a really easy way for the state, being the state of South Carolina, and also the state being, like, the United States and Obama, to ignore the fact that really what the problem is that we have a nation or whatever where black men and women and all and people of color are murdered by the police on an outrageous level, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's something like 500 police killings this year already. And that those are all related. Like, the church burnings that have been happening since Dylann Roof.
Mm-hmm.
The, like, I feel like there's no major distinction between Dylann Roof's murders, the church burnings, and, say, like, the execution of Mike Brown by police in Ferguson, Missouri. I think it's all part of a similar, like, white supremacist framework. And I think that, like, certain white supremacists want to push that farther. Like, they see, because there is, like, in white people, there's, well, I mean, not all, but there is, like, a fear that people have that's this, that's also a very basic point, or, like, tenet of white supremacy is, originally it was, like, poor white people were, like, could feel good because they were above blacks and above, I mean, not Latinos at the time, but above Native people. And that same thing is, like, there's a fear of that, like, that somehow,
it's going to get taken away.
Yeah, it's going to get taken away, that there's going to be people breaking into their homes and raping their women. I mean, Dylann Roof literally said, "You're raping our women." Like, that is the most, like, basic tenet of white supremacy, is that there's this, like, black menace. So, I don't know. And I think, sorry, I'm rambling.
That's good.
I think that the fact that the Klan chose, the Klan group is from Pelham, North Carolina, which is northern North Carolina, close to Virginia. Mm. And I think that they came to South Carolina.
The Loyal White Knights.
Yeah, the Loyal White Knights, which you can find their website online. And if you felt like it, there's a phone number there that's like a 24-hour hotline. And you could call it maybe and harass them. I don't know. Or not harass. Express your opinions.
At least tell them their website, their web skills suck.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely have like a GeoCities-style website. But it's crazy. It's really racist, obviously.
This is The Final Straw on Asheville FM, WSFMLP 103.3 Asheville. You're hearing a conversation we had with John, an anti-racist insurrectional anarchist who grew up in the South. John discusses the anti-Klan rally that happened on July 18th in Columbia, South Carolina, what he saw, implications, who was there, and why.
One of the most interesting things for me personally about the July 18th was the like various forms of unity that were happening. And
yeah.
I see it having happened in like three distinct ways. Mm-hmm. One of them was the gang unity, which you've spoken about. And the other two were like unity in support of like violent action.
Yeah.
And the other one was, which for me like was the most important one, was unity against the police.
Yeah.
I remember hearing people talk about like the very, very few like pro-police sympathizers within the anti-racist mm-hmm. crowd being like, you shouldn't talk bad about the police, and people yeah. being like, nah.
Yeah, totally.
I was wondering if you could talk about like the role of violent actions and also like the role of like anti-police sentiment within the crowd and like how that felt for you if you saw that.
Wait, role of violent actions. Or like how specifically it, or in life in general.
Or no, just on the day.
Okay, like, yeah.
Peace police, sort of? Is that what
you're like, or peace police versus like people who are in support of like violent action. Yeah.
Weirdly, I didn't. I think somehow I'm only. I don't know. I positioned myself trying to be with crazier people, maybe. So I didn't actually see anyone trying to stop people from. Like, I didn't see peace police other than actual officers of the peace.
Mm-hmm.
But in a video, I saw some people yelling at some progressive-looking white man. And I've heard of other things where people... But it was a very... If there was that, that was a tiny minority of the people that showed up. Like, I feel like the people that showed up to this particular demonstration intended on violently confronting white supremacists. And mostly to express, I think, like, you guys are trying to... claim control over our state or over the South, and people were not having it at all. Let me think. So yeah, the peace police, I don't really know. There's definitely a unity against, or of like the crowd against police, which was amazing, kind of. Because I think that as like anarchists or whatever, we sometimes like stand out for being freaks or something. We're like, oh, and the police, and everyone's like, why are you bringing this up right now? And I did, like, I remember a point where while the rally was still happening, a bunch of anti-racist type folks or whatever with a bunch of banners had marched into the side of the rally and started chanting the KKK in a particular like kind of dancey way, and then the whole crowd started, and then someone was like, the police too. People were like, yay. And a lot of people were like, later when we were outside of the parking garage, I remember talking to a few young people who were saying, they were like, really, to be honest, I'm not scared of these Klansmen. We can take them any day, but mm-hmm. I'm terrified of the police. They're the ones that kill black people all the time. They're the ones that are actually the real enemy. Or maybe not the real enemy, but they are an enemy that is, like, there's a recognition that, like, both of those are the same thing. And, like, I remember somebody saying something about how, like, who cares about ISIS? These people kill way more of us every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was, like, and they were talking about the KKK, and I was, like, to be honest, the cops kill more people than anyone. And they're, like,
true.
Indeed, brother.
Yeah. I think there are something like 4,000 KKK members in the United States.
Yeah.
And something like 900,000, like, officers who have arresting powers in the United States.
Yeah, so I mean, like, well, New York City has like 40,000 active police. Yeah. But I think that that number, the 4,000, is also maybe a random number. But not to quote Vice or anything, but there was a really interesting video documentary that they did recently about the rise in the Klan and their and white supremacists in general trying to organize disenfranchised veterans, which I do think is a real thing. Like, I think that it's really important to confront these groups and to show that we are the real rebels, not the South. Like, I think that there's a real possibility for a lot of young disenfranchised white kids in the South, but the Midwest or like rural California or wherever to join up with these groups because they, in their minds, represent anti-system or whatever. And I know this is tangential, but I think it's really important somehow, and I don't know how, to try to organize something that is anti-racist, but not like ARA, because I think ARA is far too specifically focused and at this point almost has become like, I don't have any beef with anyone in ARA. I respect what they do, but I don't think it's like as open culturally or something. This
for,
is
for like security reasons of the people that are involved in organizing.
Yeah, for security reasons, and also I think because at some point maybe you become
professionalization.
Yeah, it's like a professionalization. But I do think there needs to be some amount of attempt at reaching like young white people in a way that maybe a lot of us have kind of leftover like Maoist traditions inside of us, like we read Sakai, like the myth, or like Settlers, and like we sort of, like, even though I don't think we really believe this, maybe some of us do have this like myth of the white working class or like feel different or something. But I think these other groups are trying really hard to organize poor white people in the Southeast. And I think that really clearly poor white people and black people obviously have similar enemies. And like white supremacy is keeping everyone in place.
There's one thing that's come up, like just to kind of jump back to to Dylann Roof.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the media portrayals of him have presented him as a lone gunman. Do you think that that's that's true, or do you think that's a misrepresentation of, as if he was just a lone wolf just acting on his own and a total out-of-the-blue thing?
Well, I think that, weirdly, it's the media misusing the concept of the lone gunman. Like, the lone gunman is, from my understanding, it's this white supremacist third positionist concept, which the third position is, like, some kind of weird, not totally authoritarian, right-wing racialist thing. Mm. But that was actually inspired somewhat by anarchist groups slash, like, anti-animal or animal rights organizations in the, like, in the 80s. And I think that it came out of, and this is really just me thinking, but I'm pretty sure it came out of, in the 80s and 90s, repression towards, like, larger-scale white power organizations, and then them realizing that maybe, like, the way to actually commit terror or, like, is the individual. In some ways, they're kind of like, yeah, I mean, I think he is technically speaking a lone wolf. Like, he believed in himself as being like this vanguard in like inserting himself in things, but I don't think he's a lone wolf in the way where what the media means, where that it doesn't mean anything. Like, I think he was inspired by other, this something called like the Last Rhodesian or something, some website that's from South Carolina. And I think that these groups are really pushing for isolated individual youth, just as ISIS does. Like, they're like, individuals should take action, and thus it will inspire more people. Like, that's their whole thing. So I don't think he's a lone wolf in that he's just, it's like an isolated incident. It's very clearly part of a concerted white power slash state response to the most recent wave of anti-police black, and not just black, but mostly black uprisings in the U.S. Like, I think it was sort of ignorant for me and my friends to not assume this was going to happen soon when we were watching Baltimore and Ferguson, which is, I think a lot of us were lost as what to do after the shootings. Like, it was just sort of like, it was a reeling, wrenching feeling inside of us that this was happening again. And then these churches started burning, and I, at least to myself, was like, look, if any group comes out in support of them publicly, we have to go. Like, I think that it was imperative that people go and try to, like, crush the Klan or whatever, run the Klan out of town, as the propaganda said. Because, more so now than ever, like, these people are a threat. Maybe. And I think that, at least in South Carolina, you can't let, or anywhere, a group that basically is cheerleading for a person that's acting as a anti-black actor.
It's like someone trying to spark the race war.
Yeah, they're essentially, but what's cool is that in some ways their race war, what they really sparked was like a, not to be too much of an insurrection anarchist, but a mini social war against them and the police. Like, what because I think that what they wanted to have happen minorly, but they wanted to have like large groups of black men fighting like dumb white people who claim they weren't for the Klan, but were just for the flag, but happened to show up at this Klan rally. And I think that what they really wanted was to have this, like, on-display image of, you know, black versus white or whatever. And I keep saying black versus white because South Carolina, at least in the city that I saw, is very black and white. It's not like the West Coast or other places. And I'm sure there are a lot of other groups represented. Obviously, the governor is of Indian descent. Aziz Ansari is from there. But I think it's important to contextualize it in the South as black and white. But yeah, they wanted that. And instead, what happened was, like, black people of all ages and different backgrounds came together. White people came, some Latino people of different backgrounds came to physically fight them. And so, yeah, it was kind of like the best outcome from an anarchist perspective that could ever have been. I mean, not the best, obviously, I guess, you know, the abolition of the state and capitalism, but in a realistic way, I think that was probably the best thing that could have happened the way it went down.
Mm-hmm. What would you say the role of anarchist intervention in the day was? Like, would you say it was useful or not, and how or not?
I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I feel like there will be people that claim, when they write back or like write reports on it or whatever, we'll use the like we in the way that I try not to, which is like, which I think in some ways implies like anarchists had a bigger role than maybe they did. I think that anarchists or anti-racist anarchists or whatever, people that came down there mostly I mean, almost all were from the South, which is really important, I think, or came from other Southern places. And I think that in some ways, anarchists from other places might not as much because they don't see, some people don't see race as being as important or don't see things like this as being important. And I think that as a whole, Southern anarchists have a better perspective of this stuff, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're forced to, like...
It's palpable.
Yeah, it's like growing up here, if you're not a black person, I mean, maybe if you are too, but I'm not, you have to define yourself against a legacy of violent white supremacy mm-hmm. and for black insurrection. Like, it's an imperative, I think, to be able to have any sort of real political analysis here. And maybe that's not the case in places where people don't have as much of a direct thing. But to get back to that role, it's weird to see. I think that in some ways it was, like, inspirational to some. I think certain points... Okay, there's definite points where I think that the anarchist role was actually, like, helped the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the very beginning when the Klan was coming in, a lot of... When I first got to that point, it was mostly pro-Klan / Confederate white people there. And then, funnily enough, a media person actually told me, oh, the Klan's coming in this way. And so then that word was spread throughout the crowd really quickly. And so I think that instance, a lot of, once we got that word spread, then all of a sudden, instead of like 50 or 40 white supremacist or pro-Confederate people, there was like 300 or whatever anti-Klan protesters. And so I think that like sort of like trying to like do a little bit of recon maybe was a helpful thing. And then also from what I was told, and I don't know if this is true, I think the first person to hit somebody with a thing was some guy with an ARA flag maybe, or like an anti-fascist, like the like... It's this particular symbol flag.
The red and black.
Yeah, and was arrested pretty quickly. I mean, maybe allegedly did that, but, and maybe that helped things, but I don't really know because I wasn't right there. So there's that. And then during the KKK rally, when people went off to go burn a Confederate flag, anarchist type people came back and were chanting "F the Klan" and had a drum. And so I think that, and that really livened the crowd up because people, at least I was getting bored and hot.
Yeah.
And so there was like a musical element, and also like no one had really said, except for individually, like sworn, because at least I was kind of nervous because, I don't know, South Carolina is more South than North Carolina, and people, there's like etiquette in the South, and so like you have to really mean it. I think like swearing means more. Maybe I'm wrong, but. I think it was really helpful for the crowd because people started dancing around. The fact that anarchists brought really big banners that clearly stated, like, against white supremacy, I think, and then the Confederate flag one, or the burning flags one, and then also someone brought a drum that was an anarchist. I think those things were material help.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I think also just the fact that non-black people... that are pro-criminal came... to express our, not solidarity exactly, but our, well, I guess, yeah, solidarity, but physical solidarity with people in South Carolina and people in Columbia was probably really helpful in the way in which, like, I know sometimes when I've read things about white anarchists participating in riots that are mostly not white, people have this, I think, silly analysis. This is me pitching my political thing, that it's like everyone becomes one in the moment of riot. But I don't think that's true. I think what it is that, like, people accept white, sometimes, not always, but like are accepting these white people because they're actively acting against whiteness and they're actively like putting their safety on the line in solidarity with other people. And so I think just having white people yelling at the cops, yelling at the Klan, throwing stuff at the Klan, like up in there de-arresting people,
mm-hmm.
I think was important for some people because I talked to, and I can't speak to everyone there. Like maybe some people were like, why are these people here? Mm-hmm. I have no idea. And also not all the anarchists were white by any means. Mm-hmm. But I think in that way where like, that's what people will see just because, you know, I don't know. It's hard to say towards the end. I think anarchists there did a pretty good job of like doing what I liked. It's like going in groups of like two or three and just kind of like milling about. We all didn't wear, like, black block or whatever because there's a million reasons, but it was 100 degrees. The Klan
anti-masking
now is...
Anti-masking
laws. Yeah, there's anti-masking laws, which actually happened. Two friends of ours put on masks that said Black Lives Matter on them to distinguish themselves from white supremacists and started yelling at the police and saying, like, who are you protecting? Look at this, you're protecting Nazis. And they were detained and had their masks ripped off because of, ironically, a law that exists in most southern cities that is an anti-KKK law. Mm-hmm. And so, which I don't really know that many Klans people, but I've known that to be enforced against anarchists and young people that are in riots all the time, even though they're obviously not part of the Klan.
It's also to stop banditry sometimes it gets like around here, around Asheville.
To be fair, it's not unreasonable, but mm-hmm. And then also because I think people didn't want to wear all black because I didn't really even think about this, but a lot of these groups are now trying to wear like black fatigues and look more militant so as not to, I think, to shed their old imagery of like Klan robes, because that's really outdated. And so I think some people found themselves unfortunately dressing closer to the Klan than they intended to. I don't know. What else were anarchist roles? I don't know. I mean, I think that people were there throughout. I definitely, though, would give it up to, like, I don't think that anarchists definitely played as front-facing of a role as other people. But I do think that some anarchists and, like, whatever. Like, not everyone's an anarchist. Some people are, like, anti-state communist or whatever that went really like worked maybe like not like blended well as far as like not being obviously not of South Carolina or whatever, but blended really well crowd wise with other people. And that was actually a really interesting thing, is that the crowd moved in such a way that I've really never experienced, where like, because I think everyone was there in a anti-law unity against the Klan, against the police, and there were no leaders. There weren't, like, you'd usually expect to see some Stalinists or even the new Black Panther Party, who was associated with a rally that was happening elsewhere, try to tell the crowd what to do, but no one did that, and the crowd just moved kind of collectively in a flow that I've never experienced. That was pretty amazing. So I think, I know we had some impacts, but I think just being there was also really important from my perspective. I don't know.
Can you talk about some of the anti-racists who have been arrested, to your knowledge?
There were 5 arrests, from what I understood, which is confusing because there were definitely more, like, detainments. But I think the police weren't, I saw white power people being detained, and they aren't even in the arrest, like, lists, which, of course, right, the state doesn't.
Yeah. Wants to hide the identity of white supremacists. Also.
Yeah, but they're going to give the names out of anti-racists. I'm pretty sure there were 5 arrests. 4 out of the 5 are out of jail now. If they were from South Carolina, got OR'd, which is on their own recognizance, which means they didn't have to pay. It was like a suspended $20,000 bail or something.
Whoa.
There are 2 white people who got arrested who were both from out of state, and they bailed out, I think, with like $213, which is like $20,130 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's one man that's still in jail because he had been out on, or he had probation. And this is my understanding from talking to a friend that got arrested. And he is probably facing, it seems like, 10 months in jail at the Richland County Detention Facility. But I'm not clear. It's the Columbia City Jail. And I don't know. We're sending letters to him and trying to raise money. But yeah, he'll be in jail for a while, and so hopefully we can raise money for his commissary. The friend that I talked to who got arrested, who was white, said that he had a good time in jail. He's been arrested before, but he said it was cool. Like, everyone knew why he was there, and people were supportive. The other people he got arrested with, he got some of their numbers, so we're going to follow up, hopefully, with them.
Cool.
Yeah, it was positive, right?
Who are the other people that were in the jail?
Because
you were saying.
Oh, well, because I got kind of worried because, you know, there's white power people in prison, but I guess less in county jails in South Carolina. So it was, I mean, my friend said that there was about 90% black people, black men. And so obviously the police weren't happy. But yeah, it sounded like people knew exactly why they were there and gave them props for having physically, because everyone got a charge with at least like simple assault. So it wasn't like anyone got like blocking the street or whatever. Yeah. Although that's simple assault.
Yeah.
Like, words are assault.
You've been hearing a conversation we had with John, an anti-racist insurrectional anarchist who grew up in the U.S. South. Next week, we'll present the rest of our conversation, which includes discussion of media coverage of the rally, background on the new Black Panther Party, and even a little local history. Did you know that the Ku Klux Klan got chased out of and banned from Asheville in the late 1990s? More on that next week. Or if you can't wait, this episode is available as an especially long podcast for this week's episode with a bit of Dirty South rap thrown in, swear words and all, and the whole conversation with John. Check that out by following the link in this week's blog post at ashevillefm.org/the-final-straw. If you're listening live, stay tuned for Onward Through the Fog with DJ Jake for 2 hours of laid-back music from all over the spectrum.